Colloquium, our guest is Rhiannon.
Well, my perception of today was that we would talk and I would do some and then we would talk and that would lead me to the next thing I should do. So I'm not going to really like do a performance for you. You didn't think I was going to do that, did you? Not in 50 minutes. I've just been in Vancouver for the last week doing my rather autobiographical show called Toward Home. So I may do some pieces of that for you today. But I welcome your questions because that will help me figure out what you want to know and where to go with it. I was raised on a farm in South Dakota, so I come from a decidedly un-jazz, un-theatrical kind of background. But I started singing very young and did a lot of theater in school, I'm sure, as a way of preserving my life and finding a way to leave there. And I went right to New York and did a lot of theater there. I left my singing behind somewhere along the way because I was trained as a classical singer and I wasn't really interested in it as a form for me to perform. It was really a way of studying. And I didn't know what I wanted to sing, so I quit singing altogether and the theater opened up for me. So actually my degrees are in theater. Have any formal kind of school training in voice, except for different private teachers I've had. So my theater training was in the late 60s, early 70s. Nope, decidedly late 60s, 67 to 69. I got my master's degree at Cornell. In a time when, I don't know how the training is now, but it was very eclectic at that time. We had fencing class and dancing class and singing class and mime class and acting class, like that. It was very good, nice, round kind of training. Then I went to New York and did all the cattle calls and stood in all the lines and did the deal, which was very discouraging, very difficult. I did some shows in New York, but it was pretty discouraging. Pretty much what I did was go to jazz clubs at night and worked a day job and went to my auditions at noon and would come back crying to the office in the afternoon. And it was vital for me to have done that. I don't regret a bit of it. It's very important. I got to understand what it was like to do that work and what people look at and in what producers are looking for and directors and what booking agents are looking at. I think it's different now. I actually think it has changed some, which is a great relief because at the time it was extremely look oriented. If you didn't look the right way, it was very difficult to get in the door. So that led me back around to my singing because I'd been listening to jazz all that time and my heart and my body have been getting filled up with what it meant to improvise. And I think that beyond being a singer or an actor, I'm really an improviser. That's the thing that interests me more than anything, is being on that edge, being on that cliff place. I really love that. So the theater started to get very difficult for me. I just was the wrong shape, the wrong size, and the wrong height, and the wrong something or other. And the music started calling again. So I got back into the music and really left the theater. So now, then I was in this women's jazz group for 10 years. We made albums and toured all over, and that was really good. And then I started working by myself, feeling like I wanted to be deeper in the center of the community. And any time being in a women's anything, there's a tendency to call it fringe or not the mainstream or whatever. I'll be damned if I know what the mainstream really is, other than what I'm shooting down through my life. So I put myself back in the what I thought was the stream of jazz, and did a lot of collaborating, a lot of work with other artists, and the theater just started to come right back into that. So I developed this autobiographical show called Toward Home, and now I'm starting to work on another piece. And I don't care if the show has more singing or more acting or more acting or more singing, or if I'm collaborating with a painter or collaborating with a didgeridoo player or collaborating with a couple of musicians or whatever. It's all sort of the same to me. I just want it to be interesting. That's the deal. So it's great to be with you, because I'm interested in what you're doing and how you're finding your way through that, because this is like 20, 25 years later, and I don't know what the deal is. It might be remarkably alike, it might be remarkably different. So maybe I'll improvise for you a bit. Mysterious package is not part of the show. Low-tech advertising. I have some tapes and CDs and a brochure in here. What if the room disappeared from you? What if the ground was soft? What if we sank down in a hole inside the earth? What if we stood or lay? Or crawled inside this very tight space? What if our eyes could only see? What if our ears were larger than they seem? What if our touch could reach outside that hole? Will we still be locked inside? She goo 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 chiki goo 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 chiki goo 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 chiki goo 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 There are too many of us in there. I can smell everything. I can smell too many things. There is too much going on inside this hole. Do I reach out with my arms. The ground is so soft I can push it out to the edge of my fingertips. And yet all of you are in this space with me. How did this happen? How did this happen? It's too small in here. It's just too small. So if every one of us reach out with our two hands and maybe our head, we could make the space a little bit, little bit, little bit, little bit bigger. Reaching out so it's beyond our fingertips. There's a little bit of room now. A little bit of space now. I can feel my way now. I can tell my senses to extend, my eyes to see, my ears to hear everything there is, my hands to reach, got to smell everything there is to smell, reaching out, reaching up, reaching down, reaching in. Reaching in, what if inside is a banquet of suggestion and ideas and sensation and feeling, and there's all this room inside, as much room inside as we're making outside, just as much room inside as we're making outside, so much room that my arm and my heart can spread out wide, spread out wide, spread out wide.
Or put us right in a hole. So,
Well, you said that now you think that we're attached most to improvisation. And I was wondering, that's the relationship between performance, where you're expected to deliver or whatever, and improvisation, and what, how do you go between it being something, there's being some structure, and yet there's being freedom to create.
What sort of a large question? If you're in a show that has lines and it's set and you have a director and you're working in that context, then that's the context you're working in. If you're if you're pure improvising, like what I just did, you're just standing there and seeing what comes out. In a certain way, I really don't think they're very much different. You're maybe asking a different part of your body and your psyche to tune in, but really all you're trying to do is be there, be all the way there. And you know, when you're in plays, if you flag for a moment, if you disturb your flow for a moment, you've missed some essential part, and it's I found it very discouraging. I think the reason I went back to music from acting is I found it easier to stay in that state longer in music than in acting. I would have maybe 5-minute segments in a play where I was a character, where I'd feel like I was gone in that character, like I was so gone, I was completely present, and everything I did was completely motivated in a correct way that was beyond me. But it was harder to stay in. There's something about music, because of the sound waves, I can stay in it. But I can't, I'm not very interested in just singing songs, so there's something about the theater that really pulls me. I feel like I always love to be around actors. I just like the way actors are. sort of in a way more than I like musicians. Because musicians are thinking usually about their instrument, and lots of times they're standing behind it, whereas actors are in their instrument, and they tend to think in a more, I don't know, maybe this, I'm making this up, in a more collective way, because you're making a play together, you have to. So the show that I just made, the autobiographical show, is I didn't want to construct a play so I'd have to do it the same every night, and I didn't want to free improvise, because I did that for about 2-3 years. I would set up these gigs, and then I would just exercise really a lot during the day and warm up, and then I'd go on stage and see what happened. And some nights they were really great. They were very intense and wonderful. And other nights they were, you know, I just wouldn't quite get there. It felt inconsistent enough for me not to feel like that was quite the path. So my director and I shaped this show in a way that it's like a road map, I think, so that there's a beginning song. It starts with Blackbird, some variation on the Beatles song Blackbird. And then it's like, if you're going to go from here, from A to B on the freeway, is one way to approach it, or there are all these side roads. So what I've done is I've set up in the show these possibilities that at certain points along the way I can jump out of the framework and improvise for however I need to, and then I've got a place to come back into the framework again. So it makes me feel more steady, more sure, and at the same time I don't feel trapped by a text that I can't change. So I really like the combination. Although I used to love to be in plays when I felt real deeply about the character. That was a great joy to me. But I think personally speaking, because of being a musician and an actor, it's a better flow for me to do that. And what my director did was she was a witness a lot. She would sit and watch me do stuff, and then she'd say what she saw. But mostly she'd be using my words back to me, feeding back to me. She's really brilliant at her ability to be a witness, which I consider a very, very creative part of the process. So, well, I have a guitar player in this particular show. So we do the first song, and then the second piece is a long poem over music about where I grew up. But it's a constructed poem. I've memorized it. But it is a poem over music, so that starts to... And then I do an improvisational segment that goes harder, but I'm thinking rhythmic. So I do something that takes me into a 3-4 because I've been in a 4-4. So I use this rhythmic section to change time signatures. Then I do this piece with a guitar player that's it's this. Poor little sad little blues head, don't you cry, don't you fret. You can bet one lucky day you waken and your blues will be forsaken. One lucky day, lovely love will come your way. Long as there's love in your heart to share, dear blues head, don't despair. Some gray morning when the birds are singing, it's because they're busy winging. They just fly south to be full of song again. Pretty little blues head, don't you be a mourner. Don't you sit there alone in your corner. You'll always find love within your heart sleeping, and it won't be hard to convince it to wake and to stay and find all the joy that you left way behind long ago, dear blues head. When you're alone and you're feeling sad, all the love you had, happiness will overtake your sorrow. Something new is gonna shine tomorrow. Loneliness can't hold a heart that's strong and true.
You go on, you get them blues, don't you give up trying. Soon you're gonna stand up and send your blues flying. Just when you think that you're not gonna make it, some joy will come get you and give you wings. You'll find that life and love each can fit hand in glove. Ooh, that's not easy. Stretch out your wings, blazing blues, and it's time to take a giant step. Now's the time to use the strength you gathered. Keep on breathing, you won't shatter. Kick up your heels, all you need to do is fly. There's just no more time to cry. Go on and get them blues, and
And then I drop into an improvisation about something about intimacy. I just leave it at that word, whatever that means to me that day. And I do, I'm sure you do this exercise somewhere in your training, a stream of consciousness. I try not to know the word until it's out of my mouth. I try not to judge the word or edit it or fix. It was rather what I was doing in the first piece. So I don't know where I'm headed, but I've overlaid in my consciousness the idea of intimacy in that section with the idea that whatever. And then there is a song, and so it goes like that.
I was wondering about your improvisation. I mean, how much are you using your improv, the words as well as the poetry, like the poem and this kind of improvised melody, and what work with that too, or is it all the improvisations, your own words with melody?
Well, there's the song that comes after this. It's called Swimming Upstream, and I composed it in a studio. What we would do, my director and me, is we would go in and put the tape recorder on and work for a couple of hours. And then I would go home and edit these lengthy, horrific tapes trying to hear what I'd done. And I've gotten several pieces out of that by messing with them. And this piece was, it's a poem. And I changed the melody. The guitar part underneath it is very modal, so that I'm not committed to a melody line. So I just mess with the melody. So there's just guitar and a percussion part. And then what, like this, the bluesette that I just did, that's very strict. It's going fast, and I've got to stay pretty close on it. I can change a few notes. I can bend a few notes here and there, but I've got to pretty much be on the case. And I like to do that too, because precision is, I think it's underrated in improvisation. I think it's misunderstood that improvisation is this wild freeform madness that makes most people go like, oh, what are they doing? Or, oh, I wish I were doing that. I don't want to watch it. So in my work in improvisation, what I like to, I feel that it's a great training. There's a great specificness to improvisation. You study how to get into your unconscious. You study how to get to the core of what you're doing, and you learn to repeat things in a way that has that improvisational nature. So I just lost my train of thought. Mm-hmm. You asked me something about, did I ever change the...
So that's what I was wondering, like, if you took, like, for instance, she used to be working with Michelangelo, so, like, you took her poems and, like, set them musically, or,
yeah.
Or did you do your own stuff, like, can you kind of answer that when you say that you,
as you're like, whatever's going up and comes next. You don't necessarily.
It was on a talk show on TV, and there wasn't a lot of creative time for what we were doing. So I just listened to her read it once, and then I just improvised with her, which is really fun. I like cross-referencing with other forms. Like I have this painter that I like to work with, either in communication with something she's painted or before she's painted it so she can go and paint. That part's very interesting, but that got me off on the thing about improvisation being a skill.
It seems like a lot of us talking about the language and the voice, improv. I wonder how much thought you give to visualizing the gesture, because it does seem to be an important tool. I didn't know if that's a visual part of thinking about.
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, because I began this as a singer, I was doing most of these things in jazz clubs where there's a sound person but barely any lights and not much theatrical presentation and not much room. And when I was singing with the quintet, there was never any room. So I got used to standing really still, and I think that's one of the things that set me out of just that pure music form, because I like to move. In certain pieces, I think I've constructed my gestures. I have a character that appears in this show, a Norwegian farm woman, and I think she's very, I think her gestures are different than mine. But I'm still evolving what that means, because I'm still evolving what it means to have my body free in space to do whatever it wants to do, with a constant vigilance from my other eyes as to what I look like, and not judging myself, but giving myself room to explore. I try to make my stage space fairly big so I can have some room to do that. I wear clothes that are really comfortable. But it's not like being in character. In this show, I'm in myself most of the time. But I think I'm very aware from all these years of working in those different forms, I'm thinking about the visual all the time. It's very important to have my other eyes watching me to tell me. And I'm very conscious of my body because I'm a round woman. And I am conscious of the fact that round women usually hide that on stage or diminish it in some way. And so I actually sing a fair amount about my body during the show, which is pretty healing for me. So I just, instead of ignoring it, since it's right there and everybody can see me, I'm not hiding from anybody. In fact, I put myself in the light so everyone can see me more. So I just decided to go into it. So I do a piece that's called, Oh My Body. And then I just let myself talk about whatever's up for me about my body, with the agreement that I will not degrade myself. And that's really a temptation, is to make fun of myself. So I get very aware of my body. And at the end of the show, I do the hokey pokey, which, you know, is a children's poem. But it's about putting your left foot in, take your left foot out. So as I go through each body part, I like talk about it. I have a discussion with myself about what that body part is like for me. So I get way into it, and I don't know what the next show will be like. It's very difficult to move from an autobiographical show. If you have done one already, or whenever you do one, it's so compelling because you're diving into personal history, and you've got to make this big commitment that your personal history is worth talking about. Once you get through that and actually make a piece of it, it's very difficult to leave because it seems like that's all I know. I don't know anything else. I've completely dried up the well. So now I'm, next piece seems to be becoming about ancient, very ancient music. as exemplified by this player who uses a didgeridoo and these real ancient horns and gongs and all kinds of from around the world. And a very modern jazz piano player who plays very strong, thick kind of chords. And so I'm going between those two places and I'm letting some characters come through me that I think fit in there, and then we'll see. But I'm standing, I'm the bridge between those two places. It's called, so far it's called A Bowl Full of Sound. But it'll probably be another year before it's shaped. I have to leave myself a lot of time, as I'm not working on grants or anything. I work it out in front of people. So I go and do it as a work in progress in certain places and keep seeing what the next piece is and try not to hammer it into shape, but to leave room for it to keep changing. Because in fact, the autobiographical show changed right up to the last night I did it. It just kept changing all the time, which made me very happy. How many of you work mostly in improvisation? How many of you work mostly with script? How many of you have written a script? Well, that's certainly, I mean, that's definitely the tradition of how you get trained, is to examine the great works and be in them. I'm really glad I got to do some of that. It's very vital work. But I'm really glad there are other ways to go when you make your other moves as you go along in life.
Classic training and old training, and would you be where you are without that formal training?
It was very important to me. I didn't have a choice, but I was taught by these twin nuns. One taught me piano and one taught me voice. Very sweet, I loved them both a lot. But it gave me some very stuck habits. So when I left there, that's why I had to quit singing. I think my intuition was, if I ever want to have my own voice, I have to stop singing completely, so I can hear other voices and take them in. There was too much judgment going on in my part. Oh, I could do that, or oh, I couldn't do that. So when I went to hear the jazz singers, I listened to them from the point of view of an actor, not a singer. And I think the information went in deeper. And no, I wouldn't be the same singer. It established some very strong guidelines in me about warming up, not about dealing with my body. I really learned that from acting. The sense of warming up my body, of making sure that my instrument was there so I wouldn't get hurt during the movement and performance. I know that this is a gesture that she does. Something about this over the mouth, which I'm sure comes from my mother. Something. I always felt like she was holding herself back from screaming. Part of the sense I had of her. Not that she was screaming all the time. I don't mean to paint a bizarre picture of my mother any more than anyone else's mother. How we all paint a bit of a bizarre picture of our mothers. But something about this, and that grounded me, and the apron's very grounding. It's a big patchwork, like a quilt. It looks like a quilt. And actually, my mother gave it to me. So I don't know who Nora is, she's not anybody that I know in my family history, but my sense of the prairie, since that's where I come from, is very strong, and my yearning to express some part of that is very strong. So Nora just improvises. She says whatever's on her mind, and she generally has something to say.
You answered my question, how much was improv?
Oh, I just let the words start to come, and I see where she's headed. She did a story about a tornado the other night in the show, which was actually very terrifying to me because I didn't know she'd been through a tornado. So I was having the tornado experience while she was having it. One of her children died on me one night while I was doing it. And it was terrible because for a long time she wouldn't talk about her children, and she has never named her husband. She calls him the old man. I think that her coming to me is something of, she wants to talk about her insides. She doesn't want to talk about her children. She does not want to talk about her husband. She wants to talk about her private internal life, which is what keeps her from losing her grip and running screaming off into the prairie. I think that's the essence of what she is doing with me. But now I know the children's name, and I know that actually two of them died. So I try to let her free, and sometimes, you know, I'm more successful at it than others. And one of the big things for me of improvisation is that I must forgive myself constantly for not being perfect. I must forgive myself, or there's no way to go on. I'm sure in a play, when you have lines, you must also forgive yourself for all the pieces that come up of, oh, I didn't cross here correctly, and I wasn't quite in it there, and this didn't happen, and I messed up when I was supposed to close the door. But the same occurs to me in improvisation, that it's not freeform exactly in that way. As I have conditions. The condition is that I set myself free during it. That in some way I feel like I get there. And I don't always. So that's the way it is. Oh, you were waiting.
Sorry. Making a gesture.
Gesturing.
Did it take a while to come to the street, being able to just go up the stream of consciousness, and is there anything, and you kind of answered this, but is there anything that specifically you do to help yourself along to be able to, because to me that seems so scary, just like, you know, not know what's going to happen and not judge that.
Well, one of the ways I've learned is I'm a teacher. And my students teach me what I'm trying to learn. Clearly, I have them do what I'm trying to figure out, and then I get all their versions of it, and then I get to look at it and see where I'm missing a piece. So one of the exercises I do, one is just a stream of consciousness where the agreement is that I do it at a rhythm, and I don't ever repeat words, and I keep right on going. Red wall, philosophy, giant, skyscraper, firecracker, blossoming out, trees, flowers, birds, cyclorama, lights, show, standing free, blooming, arrogance, hands, fists, tight hair, grass, pimples, face, blood, garbage, puke, syphilis, Norwegian, nasty, grass, green, brown, grasshoppers, gophers, grits, grub, and so forth. Whatever. And I don't judge it, and I completely try not to make sense. It's conditional that I don't try to make sense. Because first has got to come out all the doodah, all the cliches, all the stuff on the surface. And I find if I do that every day, by the time I'm a few days in, some deeper stuff starts to come, and I find myself creating a scene, and actually the words start to be in a sequence, and I begin to see some place, and then I drop into some other place. So that's one exercise. Is that familiar to you as an exercise? Speak. Speak to me. The other one is, I just call it, it's time, isn't it? Transformation, which is, it's a sound and movement game that you play. You go like, whoo, 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 chicka 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 not chase myself and not plan the next thing. So I teach my singing students a lot of acting, really, because interpreting a song is very much an acting task to me. Standing in front of people and singing lyrics is really it's an acting job. I think actors make better singers in that way, because we're trained to interpret and be in there.
We're out of time, unfortunately. Thanks a lot.